Good morning, this is Nikki.
Hello, this is Blake Steele with Bridgestone. How are you?
Doing good, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. What was your name again? I'm sorry I didn't get it.
My name is Nikki Morgan.
Okay. I'm calling in regards to the appeal, and I may be a couple of minutes early, scheduled for 9 o'clock Pacific time. We're on Central time regarding the Bridgestone location at 4515 Road 68.
Perfect. I'll hand you over to Amanda. She's the clerk of the board.
Good morning, sir. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Amanda. Amanda Pearson, is that correct?
That is.
How are you doing?
Good.
I guess we conversed a few times via email, but anyway.
Yes, we have. So welcome to the Board of Equalization today. Today is September 26th. It is now 8:59. So we're going to go ahead and get started with your appeal. So I'm just going to go ahead and read off your petition information, and then I'll hand it over to our chairwoman, Alicia Greenway.
Thank you.
Yes. So your petition number is BE 2019-02, parcel number 117-490-129. And the owner is Bridgestone Retail Operations, LLC. Representing them is Blake Stewart by phone. And then we have Nikki Morgan and Finney Ho representing the accessory office. So, and just to let you know, this petition is scheduled for 30 minutes. The appellant and the appraiser will each have 10 minutes to highlight points of the evidence they have provided. The last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions from the board.
Okay. And you're coming out a little bit with today's technology, wouldn't you know? But so I get 10 minutes, the assessor gets 10, and then 10 for rebuttal. Did I understand that correctly?
That is correct.
Okay. All right, good.
Perfect.
So. Good morning. Welcome to the board. Welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Gregory Garcia, Joe Crist, and me, Alicia Greenaway, as chairwoman. Our clerk is Amanda Pearson. The board is a quasi-judicial board, which means having to do with the powers that are, to somewhat extent, judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards of commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented today by both parties and determine the market value of the properties as January 1st as the assessed, sorry, I lost my place. January 1st,
2019.
Yeah, as the assessed year.
There we go.
The law grants the presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded, and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will also ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
And I know you're over the phone, so I believe you when you're raising your right hand.
I have people that are attesting to the fact that my hand is raised right now.
All righty. So do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
All right,
I do.
Thank you.
I got another colleague too. Yeah. I'm in. Yeah.
You need to swear him in.
Following the hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make the final determination. You will be issued a written decision to which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and notice of the appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all document data provided by you and the assessor, and we have reviewed it. The appellant will present your case first, and then the assessor will present his or her case. Please begin with your presentation of your case.
Is there anyone other than Mr. Blake who will be speaking for the appellant?
Yes, I'm going to introduce my three colleagues. I have Cindy Warner, Michelle Charest, and Ed Ryburn. Ed, in addition to myself, Ed is probably going to chime in, and the managers colleagues may. I need all the help I can get. I'll present the case, but they may jump in a little bit if I forget to say something.
Okay, and then as I didn't hear them swear themselves in, so if I can read that one more time and have them say I do as well. So,
okay, very good.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Perfect, thank you. All right, we can proceed.
Are we ready to go?
Yes.
All right, thank you very much. First of all, really, thank y'all for letting me, or letting Bridgestone appeal via the phone. Obviously, I'm assuming my accent's already giving me away. I'm in Tennessee, we're 3,000 miles away. I was just telling somebody earlier, I said, yeah, I've got this hearing coming up, and I'm able to call in. And I really appreciate it because this has been many moons ago when I trained at the assessor's office here in Davidson County and sat in and on many hearings, and to my knowledge back then there was no calling in. So I guess back in those days, if you're appealed something and you live in California, I guess you just hired what we called back then a tax rep, which is not a good word anymore, I don't think. But so anyway, I'd just like to begin with by saying thank you for allowing us to do that. So with that said, you know, when I got the assessment notice, and saw that it was at $1.8 million. We don't flag anything that's really, it starts, we know everything that we have here, regardless of where it's at in the country, is worth it, at least $900,000 or $1 million. And our the fire assignment plate auto cares range in size from about $5,500 to about $8,500. Now, every now and then you might have some admin offices on one, but that's the typical square footage. This one right here is 7704. And we know what they're worth. The smaller ones are usually worth about 1.1, and the ones that the larger 8500s are usually worth about 1.6 or 1.7. Now, obviously, if they're in Silicon Valley or San Francisco or Manhattan or Boston or something, that may not hold true, and maybe around D.C. or whatever. But doing all the research across the country and all the, from Atlanta to Denver to, I don't know, Houston to Miami, we pretty much know what they're worth. So when this came in at $1.8 million, definitely started doing some research. And as you can tell in my letter, I attached my evidence, came straight from one source, which I'm assuming is pretty much the Bible now as far as deriving information. CoStar, what did I say? I meant CoStar. Scratch that for the record. I meant CoStar. Anyway, I submitted that with it. I'm sure I know it did. Anyway, back to my page and a half information, getting to the heart of the matter. I know I forgot limited time here. As I said in the first couple of sentences, I didn't use the cost approach because I don't think it's really relative in normal market conditions. Relied on the income approach and the cost approach, and probably weighing a little bit heavier on the income approach for this very reason. Out of the 2,200 locations we have across the country, we lease about 60% of those and own the rest, of course. Of those 60% that we lease, they're usually owned by a couple, an individual, a tightly held close family LLC or something. So we know these people are buying them for income. They're not buying them to change tires or to change oil, you know. So I use the income approach a little more heavily than the cost. But according to the market data, as of 1/1/2019, the sales approach showed about $180 a square foot for retail, which I believe is on page 7 of that of the CoStar report. And 7,700 square feet times $180 square foot comes to $1,386,700. On the income approach, according to the market data, again, as of 1/1/2019, the market rent per square foot was $14.61 with a market cap rate or capitalization rate of 7%. If you're looking at the math there, 1461 times the square footage of 7704 equals a potential gross income of $112,555. And I was taking 5% allowance for vacancy and collection loss, 5% for operating expense, which gets you down to a net operating income of $101,299. And you use an income approach of $101,299 divided by the cap rate of 7%, yields a value of $1,447,000. So I took the $1,004,000 and the $1,386,000 and basically just split it down the middle because as I said in that second to last sentence there, there was enough market activities to support either the income or the sales, which yielded $1,416,850. And then right, I'm about to run out of time, but right below that, I addressed the sale between SMBC Leasing and Bridgestone on August the 6th of 2014 for $2,398,059. And the reason I bring it up, I think I saw somewhere, it's either on the assessor's website or it's in their rebuttal. And I went on to explain that obviously there was a prior relationship. We were leasing from SMBC for a number of years before that quote-unquote sale took place. And I was saying that, and as I went on to explain in closure there that there was finance charges involved in all that. Saying, I mean, obviously by the numbers, $2,398,059, I mean, most real estate transactions would be 2.3 or 2.4. And that should be, I really wouldn't want anybody using that, even though it's 5 years ago. You could still have somebody out there that's working on their CAE designation and maybe would pull that and try to use that. I don't think it should be coded or labeled as a qualified sale. And that, what do I have, two minutes left, 3 minutes left? Yeah.
Yes.
So using the sales and the income approach according to the best data that I could find out there, I'm just glad that there's not a Christian Brothers auto repair center in Pasco, Washington. There's probably one in Seattle, but they blow the sales up in every market. They're always north of $3 million, and they're usually coded as a qualified sale, but the funny thing about that is there's a franchisee relationship. If you're a franchisee with those guys, with Christian Brothers, you have to buy that solar. And they're nice. They may have gold in the restrooms. I don't know. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's in summation. We believe that the value is $1.4 million as of 1/1/2019.
Okay. Thank you very much, Nikki.
Mm-hmm. All right. My name is Nikki Morgan. So just to run through some of the information that's kind of already been covered, each one of my report just indicates that it's a 7,704 square foot average plus quality automotive center in average condition, valued at $1.8 million. Pages 2 and 3 just talk about our appraisal methodology. If you go down to pages 4 through 6, that is our market-adjusted cost approach. So it goes over how we value the land and the improvements, the different components of the building, and the lot improvements, the miscellaneous improvements there at the end, with the market adjustment to bring cost from Marshall and Swift up to market. Page 7 is the sketch, and 8 is the photo of the property itself. And then 9 shows the aerial map of the location right off of the freeway and Road 68 in Pasco.
Okay.
Page 10 is statistics for the commercial vacant land sales in this general area. We call it Neighborhood 300. That is the Road 68 corridor of Pasco. So a very localized sub-market of Pasco that is one in and of itself. So of the vacant land sales, time adjusted, it shows that our median ratio is 69%. So even though they saw a pretty significant increase in land values this year, still not enough to quite keep up with the market, which I show on page 11 what's going on out there. So I did include sales from 2017 and 2018, but also included sales from 2019 to just help the board understand what the market on Road 68 is doing, especially for vacant land. All the way to the right-hand side, you have our assessed ratios, so assessed values compared to sales prices that have been taking place. So even with a 20% increase in land values this year, our average ratio on land is 71.78%. Just really hard to keep up when you have things like sale number two that sold for $27.46 a square foot. And that was in the end of 2018. So the next page, page 12, is a map of these locations. So again, the subject property is in the lavender purple color down off of the freeway exit at Road 68. And the other sales are either all on Road 68, and then there's one at the corner of Burden and Road 60. So as the sales indicate, land values are steadily increasing, and our statistics show that we're still a little low. Page 13 are the improved sale ratio stats for this, again, this localized area to the Road 68 corridor of Pasco. Of the 11 sales that took place over the last few years, median sales price is 81%. So again, still overall low, trying to keep up with this market that is just steadily increasing. Page 14 shows some of the sales that we were looking at when we were setting the market adjustments to trend our cost approach. Again, over on the right, you will see our ratios. The overall ratio that we just discussed, down around 82 or 83%. There are specific sales listed here, obviously not identical to the subject property, as the subject property is an automotive center. Out at Road 68, we have examples of medical offices, neighborhood shopping centers, retail space, that sort of thing. And the column, unfortunately, that didn't get printed on this page is the sales price per square foot. So please don't get confused there. You're looking at assessed value per square foot. That was thrown on there just to show you our ratios on page 14.
Okay. I got you. Yeah.
So the column that wasn't included that's pretty easy for you to calculate on your own is the price per square foot of these improvements, and we do extract land value. So if you were to take the sales price of sale number one, $5.6 million, and subtract out the land value, divided by the square feet would give you a price per square foot of $169. That, if you did that all the way down, it would give you an indication of where these sales are lining up per square foot versus the subject property. So if you were to do that, the average price per square foot selling prices of these retail properties on Road 68, the average is $242.62 per square foot. I think that's worth at least writing down. The subject is being valued at $173 a square foot. Again, sales are going for $242 a square foot. So because the subject is an automotive center, I did go ahead and pull out all of the automotive sales in the city of Pasco's general area. That's included on page 15. Again, nothing at all like Road 68. We're talking East Pasco, Central Pasco. Much older facilities. Some are much smaller. I just wanted to indicate that overall, our ratio is consistently low. It doesn't matter if we're on Road 68 or East Pasco. Our ratio here for these automotive sales is 88.85%. So we are valuing consistently across the county no matter what property type we're looking at. I did include an income approach, which I normally wouldn't do, just because that was half of the basis of the appellant's appeal. When you look at something like CoStar, especially when it says Kennewick-Richland Market, you can already tell right away it's a very broad sweep, a very broad look at the overview of the Tri-Cities market. What you're getting in my packet is very localized information from a local appraiser on the Road 68 corridors information. So my income approach on page 16 includes information carried on into pages 17 and 18. I'm sorry, just page 17. So the market lease amounts pulled and used, again, not from all over Kennewick, Richland, and one from Pasco, but these are all off of Road 68 in Pasco. Some are from listings that were pulled from LoopNet or NAI, and some are from confidential appraisals that I've been given over the last year. So the average lease rate for retail space on Road 68 was $19.43 per square foot per year. And then the cap rates are also included there. And these are loaded cap rates, again, in mass appraisal for ad valorem purposes. Taxes are not included as an expense, so the cap rate is loaded with the tax rate. So the cap rate used loaded was 8.16%. So if you go back to page 16, you can see using market rents, market expenses, the income approach does indicate a slightly lower value than our market-adjusted cost approach, but we have sales that are indicating that, that properties in Pasco, especially on Road 68, are selling for certain amounts, and we're just not willing to value them less than 80% of market value, and we're supposed to be at 100. And that is all I have.
Thank you. Do you have a rebuttal?
Yeah, I'm going to let my colleagues jump in here. I would like to point out those sales that look like following, and we're looking at the rebuttal that was sent to us, thank you, that was for like medical sales. It looked like, or maybe that was how the buildings were coded via zoning or codes or something, but it looks like there's some medical buildings, which averages $242. And also, let me point this out. I should have I meant to point it out during my first 10 minutes. But in the sales on CoStar for retail that came in, and it looked like to me, if you start looking on page 7 of that submarket retail CoStar report, it looks like to me, as of 1-1-2019, $180 is even a little high. And I'd like to point this out. When you're looking at sales for retail, there's an assumption there that 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 square foot building is heated and cooled and drywalled up and all that. I mean, logically, people, when they think of retail, they're thinking of walking into Walmart or to a Dollar General or something, and it's all finished out. I mean, if you look, I'm saying we're sitting here looking at a picture of our store. I mean, it's, I think, 8 bays, 4, and it's got a lobby that's probably 400 square feet that's heated and cooled. The rest of it's just concrete floors and garage doors and guys with some wrenches in their hands. So, I think that's a valid point to make. Anyway, I've talked enough. I'm going to let, I think Ed's going to jump in there right now and maybe have a few things to say.
Yeah, I think just to clarify something in y'all's information, it looks like that the cost value you have is around $1.3 million. Is that right? And that the income is around $1.6 million, but now I don't see how overall it gets to the $1.8 million where y'all are at.
It's a market-adjusted cost approach, and that's why the sales on page 14 were included. To indicate that overall our cost approach is trending low. We are having to market adjust these because of sales of similar properties in similar areas. So it doesn't matter if you're looking at medical offices on Road 68 or older automotive centers in East Pasco, we're trending around 80% of market value consistently, and that is with the 40% bump onto the cost approach from Marshall and Swift. Our cost approach just is not keeping up with our market here.
Right. Well, I did notice on the cost approach, too, that it has 7% depreciation. Mm-hmm. I mean, which that's, what, a 10-year-old building, and it's a 40-year life, I would assume. So that seemed like that could be a little bit low.
Not according to the inspection in 2017. It was being well-maintained. And there, rather than a 400-square-foot lobby out front, upon inspection in 2017, there was 3,600 square feet of warmed and cooled space. So while there are bays for automotive center, there's a, on page 7 on the sketch, it indicates that not just the The lobby office area is heated and cooled and finished to office quality, but the parts department and storage areas back behind it are as well.
Oh, okay. Glad to know we're keeping our customers. We wouldn't have any other way. But of course, if there's a Christian Brothers, they'll go over there. I'll take the coupon and get some old change over at Firestone.
You got it.
I don't know, that Michelle, Cindy, anything, any questions? You know, that's, you know, real quick, and I know we're about to run out of time, on your this is going back to some assumptions on the pro forma income approach that I use, which I'm assuming we're in agreement that, I mean, because it's published data that the 7% cap rate is valid. Because back to you said your 8-point-something cap rate has the effective tax rate built in. So if you took that effective tax rate out, you would wind up back down to around 7. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, the unloaded cap rates are listed on page 17. Yep.
Okay. Very good. I don't have anything else to say. You guys are very well prepared. I was telling my coworkers, I was like, I'm a little scared calling these guys. I said, they sent me a couple of emails. I've never had out of hundreds or thousands of appeals, I don't believe I've ever had an assessor's office send me their rebuttal. So they usually just say, hey, you're the one filing the appeal, just make the assumptions on your own. Hold the property record card. So anyway, I appreciate your time. I appreciate the board's time, and we will wait to see what the decision is in about a month.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
All righty. Is that the end of the session?
Well, does the board have any questions?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Okay, thank you very much for your time, and we will get back to you within 4 weeks, or maybe sooner.
Okay, y'all have a good day.
Thank you. You also.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
All righty. So we'll go ahead and take a break now, and then we will regroup here at 9:50 for our next session.
Yes. What a nice feather in your cap. You should go back and let.
This is our second hearing of the day for the Board of Equalization. Today is September 26th. It is 9:49. We're going to go ahead and get started. So the petition, I'll go ahead and read off your information. So your petition number is BE 2019-04, parcel number 118-102-183. And then the owners are Gene and Janice Beatty. We have Mr. Beatty here this morning. And representing our assessor's office is Sunny Hill. So you will have, this is a residential hearing. So this petition is scheduled for 20 minutes. The appellant and the appraiser will each have 5 minutes to highlight points of evidence they have provided. The last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions from.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Gregory Garcia, Joe Chris, and me, Alicia Greenaway, chairman. Our clerk is Amanda Pearson. The board is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with the powers that are somewhat extended judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st, as of the assessed year. The law grants and presumption of correctness to the assessor's office. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and testimony is under oath. Our clerk will ask you now to affirm testimony by raising your right hand and take the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do. Yes.
Following the hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make a final determination. You will receive written documentation, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and the notice of the appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all of your documents you have provided and the assessor's information. We have reviewed it. The appellant will present your case first. Please begin with your case.
Last year, I tried to go through the same, it was your last year or the year before, I tried to go through the same process. Unfortunately, it was denied because I did not send in a an appraisal with it. What I did send in was three different, and excuse me, but I looked for through every box we had, and I'm not sure if it's in my records here, I don't know, but you know, over the past 10 or 12 years, I received a updated, you know, tax and called in and complained about it and received a reduced one. And that's happened three times in the last 10 years. So the last time it went up, which I believe was last year or the year before, I sent in this information, but I didn't do the appraisal. So I received a letter back saying that, you know, since I didn't send in the appraisal with that I wouldn't even be allowed a hearing. So this year we went ahead and got an appraisal, and the appraisal is way less than the value that they're determining. So that's the reason for, you know, why I'm here. I know when you get an appraisal, and what I did is actually borrowed against the property to, you know, do some other stuff with it. And I know when the banks anymore, they reach up and, you know, in a hat and grab whomever is out. They can't just pick a an appraisal. So this is the appraisal I got, and as you can see, it's well below what they're trying to assess it at. So I guess that's all the evidence that I have at this point. I wish I had that copy. My wife has a copy of her high school ASB, and I was a little upset that she didn't have a copy of that I could bring with me. But that's about all the evidence I have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I remember looking this over, and it showed some, you know, comparable parcels with, you know, comparable to my property. But one thing I didn't see in that was, you know, adjacent to my property, they just put in 34 spec homes that are not, in my opinion, rated for that area, you know. So as far as I see, the value of my houses went down because the city's allowed them to build, you know, 12,000 square foot lots in an area that is all half acre to 1.5 acre parcels. So as far as a comparable assessed value, I was told years ago by the office here that, you know, they for one do this in sections, you know, like we do this section this year, and that's, well, my section's been on that section every year for the last 6 years. And so I was kind of misinformed there that, you know, I was told, well, we only do this section this year, and then we'll look at this one. And so anyways, you know, that's one thing that I seen that was missing here is that all the comparable properties do not have, you know, that type of property butting up to my back door. And so I feel that that has probably reduced the value of my home, you know, being at all quality construction, custom homes. And now I have a Aho Hayden type development in my backyard. So, but that's about all I have at this point.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Penny?
All right. So let's go straight to page one on my packet. This is the assessor's answer to the petition. Shows land value being at $83,900, improvements $497,000 for a total of $580,900. Location of properties 9800 Maple Drive. It is on a 1.15 acre lot, zoned RS 20.
The square footage of the home is 3,635 square feet with a 768 square feet attached garage, 105 and 664 square feet front and back cover porches, 1,680 square feet pole building, and a shed, 110 square feet, also a swimming pool. Page 2 shows our cost approach, market adjusted cost approach. There was a 30% increase in land from the cost approach. Page 3 will give you the characteristics of the home. So this is a stucco built home, has comp shingle, heat pump, has 3 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, fireplace, and then it lists the garage and the porches. You can see the pole building and the swimming pool. House is at average plus quality, average condition, built in 2005. Page 4 is a picture of the home. Page 5, you'll see the sketch with the house, the attached garage, the pole building. 6 and 7 is our county appraisal methodology. Just states that Washington State says that the law says that we have to appraise property at 100% true and fair market value. Page 8 gives you the neighborhood description, where it's at, our statistics, how many sales during the year 2018. 9 through 12 will be our statistical summary report. So we got 126 sales. That includes new construction for the year. And of all the sales, our average ratio is 97.16. And again, state law says we need to be at 100%. Mr. Beatty's property is a one-story, so if you look at the average ratio of that, it's at 98.28. And I do understand that he said that, you know, his house is being compared to other homes, newer development that are lower in quality. However, we are assessing, you know, looking at the ratio, not what the value is. So if his house is average plus, the others are average. And we're looking at, you know, the assessed value over the sales price. Page 13, you will see the map. The blue dot is Mr. Beatty's house. And then page 14 will show you a few homes that are similar in property that are sold circled in blue. And page 15 will just kind of show you the homes that are sold in his neighborhood, the quality, condition, size, and how much it's being sold for per square foot. And I do want to point out a few things of the appraisal that Mr. Beatty provided. If we look into starting page 3 of the appraisal, where it shows sale number 1, 2, and 3. So number sale 1 is usually used as the most comparable one. It sold for $420,000. However, upon inspection, I did an inspection on the home. There were lots of issues with the home. There was molding issues, pests, and the house was not what they thought they were buying. So that's why they bought it for $420,000, because there were all these issues. There were no doors to any of the rooms, flooring issues. It was all tiled, and it's now coming off. So sale number 2, it's a lower in average. It's a 1981 built. Cell 3, two grades higher than Mr. Beatty's. It's a 2019 sale, so we didn't use that in our sales pool to come up with the ratio. Sales 4, 5, and 6. 5 and 6 are 2019 sales as well, so we did not use it in our sales pool. If you look at sale 4, it's a 2017 sale, so it was not used as well. However, if you were looking at the adjustments that the appraisal provided for land size and the gross living area, the appraiser had gave it a average of probably 45 to 50 cents per square foot in adjustment in land size, when the average land sales per square foot in 2018 is like $3.82 a square foot.
Time.
So, yes, so the adjustment is you know, way low than what the average sales per square foot for land. For gross living area, they are giving a $25 per square foot adjustment in living area adjustment. However, homes are being sold for $150 to $200 a square foot. So, and normally we don't review appraisals done by other appraiser. However, I believe that this appraisal did not reflect true and fair market value of the sales that they provided. Also, it is a bank refinance appraisal, meaning they're more conservative when they do that. They don't, you know, they don't want to max out the loan, and so they usually do it a little bit lower. And that would
Mr.
be all
Beatty,
for me.
Do you have any rebuttal?
Well,
it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like we're using a lot of different sales, but a lot of them you're not using, and I don't know why these 2019s aren't comparable.
Our appraisal date is January 1st. So
of 18?
Of every 19. Year. Okay. So then we can use 5 years prior, but then we have enough sales in 18 as a pool to use to come up with our ratio.
Yeah, I mean, that's all kind of vague to me. I just, you know, this guy's a certified appraiser, and if I was trying to get a loan for a house, I mean, that's what he'd give me a loan for. So he's, in my book, certified. Yeah, if he's low, I don't know. I didn't have an option of choosing. So, you know, it is what it is. It's a tomato, tomato. Yeah, that's his opinion, and I guess it's the county's opinion. I mean, you can pick whichever one you want. I didn't have a choice, you know. I got the one I got.
Do any of the board have questions?
I do. Penny, what the three houses on the back, so why were these selected?
So
these particular ones?
How many sales? Like 126 sales.
Right.
So we kind of have to, just to show, you know, the board and Mr. Beatty, the appellant, the types of homes that sold, and we just want to, like, you know, a picture of, well, this property is similar to you, the size, the quality, condition, and this is what it was sold for. They're just examples, and it's the closest we can get to the subject property.
I have a question. So when I had, this has been, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, and I don't remember his name. The gentleman I used to talk to, I guess, retired, and there's a new guy there now. They came out and looked at my house, and before, you know, I'd like to know what and who justifies what is average and average above construction. You know, and I asked him at that point, you know, what, and he says, well, the difference is one's slab on grade and one's a crawl space. And so I asked him, have you ever built a home? And he said, no. And I said, well, I've built several. And there's really no difference in average and above and average construction because you have a crawl space or you have a slab on grade. So I guess it's, you know, it's the interpretation of, I'd like to know what makes that, what separates that.
We have, you know, a guideline. So,
and that guideline is because my neighbor's house is exactly like mine, stucco, you know, wainscot. I don't have a wainscot. His house is basically, I'd say, the same quality of mine. He has a stick-built shop where mine is a pole-building shop, and his house is rated at average construction because of the slab-on-grade. So I don't understand why that makes the difference of average and above because it's either on concrete or have a crawl space. I'd like to know or see the determination, who determines that and how they determine that.
It's a guideline, and it's not just the you know, the foundation itself. It's a whole guideline of what was used, the siding, roofing, and
the only
inside
difference,
of the house, you know, your kitchen, your bathroom, didn't use tile.
Yeah, the only difference is he's got concrete, slab on grade, and I got a crawl space.
And we have appraisers that are assigned to reval areas. Mm-hmm. So when the appraiser are out there, they're using that guideline to rate the quality of these homes. So they use the guideline, and our policy is we try to get it within half a grade. So it can go average, average plus to good. And when we assign the appraiser for that neighborhood, they will be consistent throughout the whole neighborhood. So it's a guideline.
Well, that's just a question I have, because basically his house is, I would say, exactly like mine, except for he's got wainscot brick on stucco. I have stucco. And as far as the quality, everything's exactly the same. But that's what I'm saying is it's somebody's opinion rated his different than mine, and he was told because it was a slab on grade. So, you know, it's somebody's making a decision at that point that I don't believe has the knowledge of what's the difference between average and above an average, because the slab on grade does not make a difference, in my opinion. So I'm just using that as an example, is all. You know, it's so, you know, the average and above an average, I think, on his property made a difference of $30,000 a year. So, and I, obviously I didn't bring that at this point. It's, you know, but I should have. But so I just want to know that what the guidelines are for that.
But if you look at our ratio again, it shows that we're consistently, you know, in the 95 to 100%. So if our quality grading is off, then it will show it in our ratio. So if, you know, if this house should have been good and we have it average, it will show it in the ratio, and vice versa. If it's lower, you know, we would see it, so.
Any other questions? Maybe.
Yeah, I got, let's see. So when you say these were chosen, I guess, based like being on a cul-de-sac or just being stucco?
No. So the whole neighborhood is on that map. You can see that it takes pages
right.
to see. So, and then we, when we apply adjustments, we apply it across the board to make it fair and equitable. So these are just examples of the homes that sold in his neighborhood that are similar, to show that, look at the ratio, we're at 95 to 100%, to show the consistency in the way we assess values in his neighborhood. So it's not like a straight comparable, like these sales were used to set values of his home. These are examples of homes that sold in his neighborhood using the same method.
Right. Okay. All right. I don't think I have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beatty, for your time, and Ms. Ho.
Thank you.
That's all.
Okay, that will conclude this hearing. Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Thank you. So you guys will contact me or let me know the findings?
Yeah, we will within, you'll have it probably before 4 weeks. But within 4 weeks, you'll have a written decision.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, dear.
Have a good day.
Nice to meet you, Mr.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Do you want this? Yeah.
You might. That's my file.
So, this on here.
Yep. Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Hoffman?
Do you remember me?
Fire chief
right.
for City right. Pasco. Yeah.
All right.
Hi. Hi, Bob.
You should.
So I have to disclose right now, I know Bob Hoffman. We do not socialize together, but I know Bob Hoffman. He's been on City Council for many years. I did not sit on City Council, but I've known him for very many years, so. Any of my colleagues here have a problem with that?
No, because I know Mr. Hoffman also.
I've never met you before.
He was a
Do you have a daughter
when I was
that's 28 years
Excellent.
Old?
Excellent.
Give or take?
Yes, I do.
Allison?
Yes.
Okay. This is very interesting. My son is Derek.
Okay.
I never
so
I didn't know.
Who would have thought
Derek was
so we all know
Hoffman.
Mr. Hoffman. Do any of us have a problem?
No, I've never actually I can honestly say I have never met
that's a true statement.
That's a true statement. Well, we do have a common interest.
Yes.
Well, I have no problem any of us sitting here.
Maybe more common?
It may be.
Okay.
All right. So we'll go ahead with that. We'll go ahead and get started with the hearing today.
Okay.
So today is the 26th of September, 2019. The time is now 10:11 a.m.
Okay.
So we're going to start with your petition. Okay. The number is BE 2019-05, parcel number 112-261-231. The owner is Hoffman Living Trust. We have Mr. Hoffman here representing the trust today, and representing the assessor's office, we have Fang Ho sitting right next to him. So this is a residential parcel, so this petition is scheduled for 20 minutes. The appellant and the appraiser will have each have 5 minutes to highlight points of the evidence they have provided. The last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions from the board.
Good morning. Welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Gregory Garcia, Joe Christ, and me, Alicia Greenaway, as chairman. Our clerk is Amanda Pearson. The board is quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with the powers that are somewhat judicial as of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. As our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessed year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is correct. The hearing will be recorded and testimony is under oath. Our clerk will ask you now to affirm testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Following the hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make final determination. We will issue a written decision to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. Decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeal, and a notice of appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all document data provided by you and the assessor's office, and we have reviewed it. The appellant will present your case first, and then the assessor will present her case. Please begin with your case.
My introduction of myself began a minute ago here, unexpectedly. I spent 12 years on Pasco City Council and made a lot of acquaintances and worked with a lot of boards of volunteers and community who did valuable services. I have a bachelor's degree in building, construction, and design. I have an MBA at CBC. I taught business law for 19 years. I taught torts and a paralegal program and real estate law. I passed a first-year State of California baby bar first-year law student examination, the Washington State real estate salesperson examination as well, and have been dealing with real estate for 30 or 40 years in various capacities. My argument here is a very simple one. My argument will not be at all like the one you heard previously, which discusses the ins and outs of assessment of comparable properties based on criteria above average of wide, vast properties and comparables. The thrust of my appeal is the pictures you've been handed, and I see are in front of you, of the property immediately to the south of mine, and a few points, the definition of how is a property valued from the website, first two questions, one and two, and a couple of points from legal sources, from business law, torts, and so on, to make a few very basic points that my appeal hangs on, which is that how is property valued according to fair market value? Question two, what is market value? The amount of money a willing and unobligated buyer is willing to pay a seller. And so I'm envisioning myself, a buyer prospectively walking up the sidewalk of my house, considering my house to purchase. I don't know of any buyers who walk up to your property with blinders on to the left and right. And so when I interpret the question how much a willing and unobligated buyer is willing to sell, I go first as an introduction to the nature of law of a legal business law textbook tells us that we begin with the plain meaning of a statute. Courts always begin their interpretation of a statute with its actual language. Actual language is willing buyer is willing to pay market price. And that's what I'm asking. What will a buyer pulls into my front door curb and says, what will I pay? So that's that point. The next point out of the same book is telling us under a chapter on rights of third parties, which is not the point here. The point here is, under a discussion of incidental beneficiaries, the performance of a contract might constitute a benefit to Keller, the next-door neighbor, by increasing the value of Keller's land, merely makes the point that the value of this property could affect the value of the property next door. In rights of third parties, incidental beneficiaries discussion. Now, the point of the assessor's office will be about mass assessments, saying that they can't do 32,000 assessments a year. You have to do some generalizations, and I get that, and I don't believe that minor differences from one property to another should count. You just can't dig that deeply into minor differences in a neighborhood. But in tort law, in nuisance law, there is a term, it's not only in nuisance law and tort law, it's all throughout the law, the idea of what is reasonable and substantial. And so what is a nuisance? Is a kid next door who comes to pick up a ball out of your front lawn a nuisance? No. The reasonable person, what would a reasonable person take offense at? And I give an example here of substantial. A de minimis case doesn't work. That doesn't make a nuisance. Grouchy neighbor, no. But the case here, New Hampshire, 1982, a dog kennel for 38 dogs, 4 feet from plaintiff's rental unit, did rise to the level of this is actionable. In the law, courts don't question the exact dollars and cents of award amounts. They look at the reasonableness of it. Is there really something here? Does this strike us as a reasonable amount? And so based on the pictures you've been handed, the 4 pages of them, of the property to my south and then my property with the pug in it, of my neighboring property, I'm taking one thing with another as to this property, which has been in more or less this condition for a number of years. It's maybe by Christmas it'll be looking better. Taking one thing with another, I have submitted a request for an adjustment of 12.5% for the year 2019 on this property. Thank you.
Finney?
All right. So let's go to page one. This is the assessor's answers to the appeal. Land value is at $45,900. Improvements, $199,200. For a total of $245,100. Subject location is at 526 North 8th Avenue on 0.28 acres, about 12,600 square feet. It is zoned R1 residential. It's a one-story over basement of 1,658 square feet over 1,658 square feet, 560 square feet detached garage, 288 square feet covered wood deck. All right, page two is our market adjusted cost approach. In this neighborhood, we kept it at cost. There was no market adjustment. Page three will show the characteristic of the home. It's built in 1936, fair plus quality, fair average condition, 5 bedrooms, 3 baths. Has a fireplace, also a detached garage. Page four, you'll see Mr. Hoffman's house, photo of it. Page five is the sketch. And six and seven is the county's methodology. And again, state law requires us to appraise property at 100% market, true and fair market value. And page eight is the neighborhood description in the market overview. Page page 9 through 13 is our statistical summary report. As you can see, we have 21 sales in Mr. Hoffman's neighborhood. Our average ratio is at 96.89%. One story over basement is at 95.62%. And page 11, you'll see a map of Mr. Hoffman's neighborhood and the sales. So this house is in the blue dot, and the sales that I have on the following pages are in blue circles and their ratios. And then page 12, we are just looking closer to what has been sold near Mr. Hoffman's home and their ratio, and we're at 86% on that. The previous pages, it's the actual neighborhood, and we're at 95-96%. And page 15 will show you examples of homes that were sold in Mr. Hoffman's neighborhood, what our ratios at, quality and condition, what it sold for, price per square foot. And I do have to mention, I know Mr. Hoffman is mentioning about his neighborhood and the condition of the house right next to his house. However, we are looking at his property and how much it's being assessed for and how much it's valued at true and fair market value. Right now, looking across the whole county, the whole Franklin County, neighborhood condition of neighborhood homes are not affecting the prices, the sales price of homes in Franklin County. So I have sales of a pig pen, and the house just right backed up to it is selling for higher than what we're assessed at. And then, we got houses that have like a junkyard in the backyard, and the houses that are selling in the neighborhood or even the back, the backyard of it is selling for market price. It's not being recognized in the market right now because of how hot the market is. There's a shortage in supply. If the market was normal, things like, homes being near a park or a condition of homes that are next to the subject property will affect the price. And we will recognize it once we see the sale. So if I see a sale that is selling way less than what we have it assessed at, it will trigger me to go out to verify and look, well, why is this house selling less than that? We send out questionnaires to verify with the new owners what are the factors or influences that cause them to purchase the price that they did. And when we're looking at it, we're consistently across the board that, condition of a neighboring house is not what is causing a decrease in value of these properties. They're selling for market value. So if you look at the sales in his neighborhood, you can see that, it's consistent. We're valuing it the same.
Do you have any rebuttal, Mr. Hoffman?
Thank you for the admission that you are valuing it the same. That's important. That's the center of my argument here. In the pictures here, as to what is the same, you'll notice in the left-hand picture, there's a broken window sitting against the house. The doorway window's broken. In the third picture four, the upstairs window is completely broken out, and the one below it, the main floor window, is jagged glass at access level to anybody walking by. And the number four picture showing some of the leaves in the property. So my take on it, quote, the neighborhood doesn't matter, is kind of, sort of, yes, it is a rising neighborhood. And so I think if I were here asking for, I want 40% reduction, obviously that's outrageous. I think what I'm putting here at 12.5%, taking one thing with another, is a fair and reasonable request for adjustment for the year that we're in. And if this place gets to looking nice someday, then we can go back up to current market and everything's great. So
I just want to clarify what I said the same, meaning that your neighbor, with the condition issue, it's all a factor in valuing. So it's quality, condition, size of home, and everything. The same meaning, if I were applying the same market adjustment to you, it will be applied for the rest of the neighborhood. So I don't say I'm adding 20% to your property because it looks nice, and I don't do it for the rest of the neighborhood. It's the same meaning that neighborhood that you are in had no adjustment, so the rest of the property had no adjustment. But depending on quality, condition, and all the other characteristics of that home in the neighborhood, that determines the value cost approach.
So I'm the imaginary person walking up the sidewalk to consider buying this house, and I'm not doing this.
People are, and like I'd explain, they are. But however, because of the way the market is, it's hot, there's a shortage in supply, people are wanting to buy now, even though there's a shortage. So they may see it, but they still wanted to buy it at market value.
12.5%. Thank you.
So you guys have to look at, you know, fair market value.
Do any of the board have any questions?
I do. Penny, on the, so when this house sells, this eyesore is sold, you would expect it to probably sell it below market value based on its condition. Would that sale go into the mix of your assessment when you go do your ratio, or would you write that one off because there's a below market sale due to the condition of the house?
Due to the condition of the house, we would reduce the condition of the house. So if I had it at average and I did not know that this was the condition of the house, we would have it valued higher. However, when we go out there and we verify that the condition is now at low quality, that reduces our assessed value. So it would meet, you know, closer to what it was sold for. However, if we're, you know, we do can disqualify homes that sold. Depends on the ratio. So if our ratio is way high or way low, we can disqualify it. If somebody purchased the property, goes in and improve the house afterward, we disqualify it because it's not, it doesn't represent when it's sold. So yes, we do disqualify the sale. I know that the house, that house sold, I'm not aware when it sold. I don't know if it was 18 or 19. If it was sold in 18, it was not used in the statistical report. If it sold this year, I think more likely it was. It will be used for next year, and we will reevaluate the sales price again. We're going to most likely disqualify the sale because it's an investment company that bought it. They're going to flip it, and then it will be disqualified at that point once we pick up the new construction and once they get a permit for it.
Mr. Hoffman,
yes.
Do you know how long this property has been vacant? Any idea?
The parents lived in it. We've been there for 30 years. So early on, the family lived in it, parents and children. Parents moved out. Children occupied it, one with another person for a while. She moved out. He sort of hung on. So I would say a year to 2 years, it's been totally vacant and in the process gradually of disgorging items from the upstairs onto the front lawn for periods and months at a time, and falling into the progressive state of disrepair that you see it now.
Did you have any opportunity to notify the city regarding the condition of the potential hazard that this facility might be?
My house is on the corner of Sylvester.
Yeah.
You can't drive by without this being, to use the language, open and notorious to anybody who's not driving down the street like this.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very nice looking house.
Hmm?
Very nice.
Thank you.
Your own residence. Very nice.
It did get the House of the Month by the city's board of the House of the Month signs.
Okay.
Yes. Sometime in the last year.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much for your time. And you should be hearing back from us within 4 weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman.
Okay, so that'll conclude the hearing for today. We'll break and close the door, and we'll see you guys can discuss.
Yes.
And then we'll come back to
nice to meet you.
Nice too.
maybe.
All right, we are back. The time is now 11:07, and Chairwoman Alicia Greenaway is going to read off the decisions for the day.
Board of Equalization decisions, reading BE 2019-02, parcel number 11749019. Petitioner name is Bridgestone Retail Operation LLC. Decision to sustain, the board's decision to sustain assessor's value of $1,807,100 is based on the following reason. Number three, uphold within market value. Number two, reading BE2019-04, parcel number 11810218183. Petition name is Jean and Janice Beatty. Decision to sustain, board decide decision to sustain assessor value of $580,900 is based on the following reason. Number three, uphold even in light of the refinance report, we uphold the assessor's value. Number three, reading BE2019-05, parcel number 11226123. Petitioner's name, Hoffman Living Trust. The board decision to sustain the assessor value of $245,100 is based on the following reason. Number three, upholding the market value. And that is all.
All right, that will conclude our meeting for the day. Thank you very much.